Thatcher and Rich.
I also want to say that there have been a number of stories of residents in Boston and along the route in the cities and towns that the marathon passes through, of extraordinary kindness shown to runners and others, neighbors and visitors who are as shaken by this experience as we are. And we so appreciate those kindnesses and thank you for them. We're going to get through this. We do not have all the answers to all of your questions yet, not all of you here in the media or others around the Commonwealth or around the country or the world. But I can tell you from the president to the members of our congressional delegation, to many, many fellow governors who have called to check in, to all of the leaders in law enforcement here in the state, at the local level, and at the federal level, we are all coming together to do everything we can to get to the bottom of this.
It's Tony Gwynn speaking out last night. 98.5 The Sports Hub. Of course I joke. It's Deval Patrick. It is 45 degrees at 8:04. And obviously a lot of people affected by what happened at the marathon yesterday. And it has not been an easy time for Rich. Now, don't get us wrong. There have been, in the sea of these problems, there have been very good news. For one, his wife Mary was cleared of cancer 17 days into her treatment. But of course, it doesn't just end there. So through August, she'll be still getting treatment, and there'll be times that she is feeling very ill. One of those is now is one of those times, and susceptible to picking up infections and things of that nature. And so you have that the whole thing coming on, and Rich has basically been taking care of the kids by himself just because Mary's been so incredibly fatigued by their treatment. But then yesterday, Rich, just so happens the second bomb that went off during the marathon went off right in front of your apartment building.
Yeah. Yesterday around, it was when the winner of the men's race was coming across the finish line. We were watching it on TV in my apartment. My wife is in a state right now where she can't leave the apartment for about another week because after chemotherapy, your white blood cells go down so low that you're not supposed to be around people. Any risk of infection is bad, really, really bad. Matter of fact, if you have a fever, you have to go directly to the hospital because your body can't do anything to fight it. So she's been a homebody for about a week now and needed to be that way for another week. So I brought my son, who is five, one of my sons, down to watch the men's winner cross the finish line directly in front of our apartment. We do that every time, every year. And we were out there for about 10, 15 minutes. I brought him back up. And after having lunch, I went to go put my youngest son down for a nap. And as I was putting him down in the other room, that's when we heard the first explosion, which was right down the road from us. When that happened, there was no mistaking that it wasn't just a celebratory cannon or something that somebody had set off. It was too loud to be that. And as I got to the window in the front of my apartment building, the second bomb went off, and I immediately saw smoke and fire in front of the window. And at that point, we knew that obviously there was something going on and it sounded like a bomb. So my wife, I immediately grabbed her masks that she has to wear if there's anybody who comes over to the apartment that may have an infection. Grabbed her mask. She put it on. I grabbed my children. And right now, I just put my shoes on. As a matter of fact, I haven't been back to my apartment yet. As you can tell, I have no socks on. I just was as quick as I could, got my shoes on, and grabbed my kids, and we went down the stairwell. Now, at this time, we still have no idea what's going on. A lot of people from our apartment were running down the stairwell as well, and the closer we got down to the bottom, more smoke started filling the stairwell. When I got down to the lobby, I was holding my five-year-old, and as I stepped down, I saw that the scene in the lobby was that apparently when the second bomb went off, it had blown some people in from off the street all over the floor of our lobby. There was blood. There was the doors were blown open. And I immediately turned around and put my son's head in my shoulder so he wouldn't see it. And I ran back up the stairwell and tried to figure out what to do. And at that point, I could get no cell phone service. So, we're trying to find out whether or not it's safer to stay in the building. I didn't know if buildings were falling. I didn't know if this is the first thing you think of when you hear of bombs going off in a city is you think of buildings falling. You have images of 9/11.
Right.
So I didn't know whether I was supposed to stay there or whether I was supposed to leave and go out into the street where there were bombs going off. So in the stairwell, I tweeted something because I could get internet service, and still at that point, nobody really had any answers. I ended up getting through to 911 finally, and I kept asking them whether I should stay in the building or leave. They told me to leave, and I said, but should I leave? There's bombs going out outside my building. They said, well, I'm not sure, and then I lost this. We got disconnected. So then I remember that there was, in the basement of our building, a doorway that leads out to the alleyway behind our building on the other side of Boylston. And I said, well, we're going to have to make a run for it. We got to go through the lobby to do so. So I grabbed my son and my wife once again, who's not supposed to do any physical activity, yet she's going up and down these stairs holding our two-year-old with a mask on, you know, around smoke and there's blood everywhere and any kind of infection could get her sick. So I'm just trying to get her out of there. We go through the lobby and once again, I try to make sure that both of our sons' faces are down in my arm so they don't see what's going on there. And what is going on there is that there's people who have run in from the street who are attending to several of the people who may or may not have lost some limbs. And so we go down to the basement, which is attached also to one of the restaurants, the one that the Joe Andruzzi Foundation was being held. And as we're going through the basement to get to the exit, I see that there's blood smeared on the floor, that there are obviously people who had been either carried out, who had left, who had gotten blown into the building, and made our way out into the back alleyway. When we made our way back out there, there were people who were running down the street trying to get away from downtown. I told my wife, we got to get you a bed as soon as possible. Just get you off the street, get you away from any kind of infection. And we remembered that we had a dear friend that lives several blocks away, closer to the water. So we got there as quick as we could. They were not home, but their babysitter was there. They let us in. Immediately, I got my my wife to lie down and try not to have any more physical activity. She was doing okay. Then we realized that my wife doesn't have any of her meds that she needs to take for the chemotherapy. So at that point, you're trying to figure out, okay, when can I get back to my apartment so I can get this medication that she has to take diligently for her chemotherapy. We let about an hour and a half go by, and the police did a masterful job clearing that area. Masterful job. It was absolutely dead about an hour and a half later. Now, that was between these flushes of giant buildings being let out. So you'd see tons of people on the street, and then it would be nothing. And then there'd be tons of people on the street, and then nothing. So I went back over towards my apartment building, and when I got to Newberry Street, there was a line of police officers there, and I told them where I lived. I showed them my ID. They said, I'm sorry, we can't let you back there. And I said, well, there's medication that for my wife, and she's going to need it, and blah, blah, blah. They said, I'm sorry, we don't know how long it's going to take, but it's going to be a while, so you might have to make other plans. So at that point, you don't have a car. My car is actually where the crime scene is. No transportation is allowed in and out of that area, and I've got to get my wife medication that she is due to take right now. And once again, I don't know whether she got infected or she got sick. A good friend of ours, the people who live at that house, ended up somehow, he got his car out of there, and it took forever just to get about, I guess it's five blocks down to her hospital, which was on complete and total lockdown. I had to call them beforehand, and you needed a badge after badge. You needed to sign in. No visitors, nobody allowed. It wasn't like the hospital that we saw on TV that had machine guns, where people were guarding it out front. But nonetheless, it took, you know, about 45 minutes to get just basic medication to get back to my wife. To get back there, Sturo, you weren't allowed to go to Back Bay, so I literally had to be dropped off on Sturo Drive and walk off Sturo and walk through Back Bay that way to get the medication to my wife. And I want to thank, of course, the people who took us in, good friends of ours. It's pretty amazing. And when I think about it, 45 minutes earlier, this person, this terrorist, whatever they are, literally set off a bomb on my front doorstep. It's a place that I go 10 times a day, usually with my two sons, my two-year-old, my five-year-old, and their stroller, in and out. I'm looking at a text here. It says, Rich, my cousin was one of the people in front of your apartment. She lost both her legs. Glad you and your children got out okay. My prayers for all. I had been standing there 45 minutes earlier. My wife and I were talking about how when my youngest son got up, I was going to bring him down, and we were going to go out there and enjoy the marathon like we do every single year, but some bastard put a bomb right in the front of my apartment and blew people's legs off right where I go every single day.
right in my front door. And I'm so angry I can't see. I don't even know what to think. I hope and pray that my son isn't old enough to understand what he saw or won't comprehend quite what he's been going through the last 4 months, the things that he's seen. I hope and pray that my wife's okay and wasn't infected from having to walk past bloody walls, people, and smoke. There's just a lot of rage going on right now. I don't understand it sometimes. And then I hear stories on the way in this morning of like this poor 8-year-old and his sister, you know, had her. I mean, the 8-year-old dies. He wants to see his dad cross the finish line. I mean, I can't feel sorry for myself. We're okay. We're alive. I mean, we have all of our limbs. I can't believe I'm saying that right now. And I'm so angry, and I don't know what to do. I don't know whether I want this guy's name everywhere on TV. I don't know if I want anyone, no one to ever know what this man's name is. I don't know. All I know is that this has got to stop. It has to stop. And I don't know what we can do to make it stop, whether it's our generation, whether it's what responsibility we have, how we can make it stop, but it has to stop. Because when you see it happen right in front of you and you see it affects your kids and it happens at your home, and God forbid if it happened to someone you love, that's the thing, is I can't sit here and feel sorry for anything. I can't. I don't have a right to. There's people out there who died, and there's people out there who were injured beyond belief, but it's got to stop. And I don't know how to make it stop, but please, someone tell me. How do we stop this? I don't know.
All right. Well, there you go. That is the question, and it is a question that will never be answered. But you have to remember, Rich, that how many more people were willing to help and how many more people did the right thing, and that the people responsible for these kinds of events are infinitesimal in terms of the population of the world.
And there were a lot. And that's the one thing I want to make sure people know, is that there were people who ran in, who helped out. I mean, just literally ran to where a bomb went off and gave you and took off their own shirts, wrapped people up, carried people away from the accident. I mean, ran towards danger. I mean, there's a lot of good in this world. And you know what? You hope that this one ripple of evil, and I saw it when my wife, this one ripple of evil, you hope shows the good in everybody else around it. And it outweighs the evil with the just massive good that's going to happen from it. The heroes, the people who helped out.
Right.
You hope that there's a reason. You hope not a reason. You hope that there's some sort of balance.
Well, bring the city together, and the next year, you know, you can't stay away from the Boston Marathon. You got to, you know, you got to even make it a better affair, and you just can't let people that do these things
don't let
to
them
try
win.
To intimidate us and try to scare us. You can't let them win. You got to go out, and you got to continue living your life, and you got to continue enjoying the things that you do.
Stay strong.
There you go. All right, Mike Gorman is going to be on, and we were like, "Hey, are you sure you want to be on?" Because today's show is not really going to be about sports, and he was insistent because he has been through 9/11. He had a very personal experience with 9/11, so we will talk to him in just a moment. Tusher and Rich.